All right. Here we are. Good evening, everybody.
Howdy.
Hello.
This week we are we're joined by a longtime friend of mine, Kevin from he has a Buffalo Pinball is like your big thing right now. But I mean, like
It's the
since
thing, yeah.
I've known you for a long time at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we really go back to E3 2001, right?
I know it's kind of funny because we met at E3 2001 at the Game Go get together.
Yeah, and we figured out we were both from Buffalo,
Yep.
right?
And we were both
Wow.
like on the same flight out and the same flight back.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we met in California and Los Angeles, and ended up both being from Buffalo, and we were part of this little niche like internet community of hardcore video gamers, and there we were. I think we were at like Universal Studios or something, right?
Yeah, like on the tram or something like that.
Yeah, really weird.
Yeah, it was pretty random, but I mean it's cool
Yeah.
that like we've always been in contact, but we kind of go in and out of each other's lives, I think, in terms of like gaming stuff. Like you
Yeah.
always like have
We kind
stuff
of
going
followed
on.
parallel paths or something almost.
Yeah, like over a long time, yeah. It's pretty
Yeah.
cool. I mean, when I first met you, you were like, I mean, I don't know if Neon Dome was a thing at that time.
Yeah, 'cause that's why I was at E3 was to cover the like tiny little kiosk at the Logitech booth that had anything to do with Nuon.
Yep, and you had
And
like the biggest like Neon site like in the world or something right that like that, right?
yeah, I mean, it's probably the only one still actually on the website or on the web. I continue to pay the $10 a year to keep it up because it's like this little like piece of the internet. It's this capsule of time that you'll never get back if it goes away, because I kind of like documented like the whole like development of Nuon through this blog that I had, and yeah, just like the ins and outs, the nitty-gritty of Nuon. Does your audience know what Nuon is if we just call it that? Like, what the heck is Nuon?
I feel like I vaguely know what it is, but I am not nearly as informed as you are, obviously.
Yeah, so I've been interviewed a few times for Nuon because I like. So I'll take it back and give you kind of like the scoop on what Nuon is. Nuon was like between the original PlayStation N64 and PlayStation 2, kind of like during the Dreamcast time. It was an attempt to bring video gaming to DVD players. So it was this.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
it was a replacement chip for like the video processor in a DVD player that gave it like 128-bit architecture, and all the, it was like a multi-core processor that would allow it to play video games. And there were three, four-ish DVD players that were ever released with this. You'd know it because it has a they have controller ports on the front. They kind of look like mini USB adapters. There's two Samsung models and a Toshiba. And each had some differentiators as far as like the features and stuff, but they all play the games, and there were only like eight games ever released commercially for the
Wow.
system. So it's a real easy game, it's system to collect for numbers wise, but some of the games are kind of ridiculous in price, as you might imagine. But yeah, it's just this weird super niche video game thing that I have some knowledge on. Just because I carried over because I was a fan of the Atari Jaguar, because I'm weird, right? So I
Yeah,
ended up with.
I've told Trey about your like complete Jaguar collection. And you had
Yeah.
like all these like unreleased games and like prototypes and stuff.
Yep. And to my left over here, you can't see it on camera, but I've got an Atari Jaguar store kiosk. So, like, what
Wow.
you would see in the store, back in the day at like, Media Play or whatever, and sample out the games. You go play Trevor McFur on it. But yeah, I ended up with one of those because there was a little game store, and I lived in a small town called Batavia, New York at the time. And there was a game shop there, and they had it. And I was crazy enough to be considering shipping one out to my house from California, because I was like obsessed with the Jaguar. I don't know why. But and I went to the store and they had one, and I was like, would you consider selling it? And they go, sure, what's, make an offer. And I offered them like $100, I think. And they were like, sure, it's yours. I was like, holy crap, because I was about to spend like $400 to buy one and ship it out to me. So I had like a Dodge Daytona at the time, And it was so it was like this hatchback, like sports car looking thing with a, a Atari Jaguar kiosk hanging out the back of it. And I was like, so excited.
That is amazing.
Yeah. It was just total coincidence.
And speaking of $100, Kevin was the one who found my Space Harrier arcade machine.
That's right. Right. Yeah, because we were.
It was literally 2 weeks after I told you that I said if I could have one arcade game, it would be Space Harrier. And then you like,
yeah, we
said there's one right down the road from me for $100. I'll go get it for you.
We were in New York City for the TNL get together, right?
No, it was a different. You were there because you went to a Yankees game, I think.
Oh, that's right.
And yeah, we met at like the laundromat or something like that. They had the pinball machines.
Yeah. So yeah, I was at the time I was more into arcade games. So I was starting to, that was like when I was really starting to get into pinball. Mm-hmm. And I said, what would be, your dream arcade game? And you said Space Harrier. And then no lie, like within the next week or two, one came up on Craigslist in Buffalo. So I went and checked it out. And for $100, it was working. The colors were a little weird on the monitor.
Yeah.
But I was like, I think I can fix this. I'll grab it for $100. And yeah, it was just a couple adjustments on the monitor and it looked great. And there it was. Done deal. And then we drove it out to your house in a snowstorm. It was pretty great.
Yep. And then we stored it. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I don't think it was all that long ago that you got the Space Harrier machine. So, I mean, it's not been that many years that you've been, like, all in on pinball.
Right, yeah. So it's been, we started Buffalo Pinball in 2013. So I think I got my first game in 2012, 2013, something like that. And now I have all this.
And you're coming to us from your garage, like we were talking about.
Yeah, so.
Because before, when you were in the arcade machines, like, you had a garage and everything. Like, I remember you had a Mortal Kombat 2 and a Discs of Tron in your garage.
Yep.
And you said, this is your new garage. It looks like, I thought it was a separate location when I always saw it on your streams. But it's like,
it's easily it's like the coolest paradise garage I've ever seen. Yeah, it's awesome.
So, yeah, I can run you through kind of what happened there. So when we moved into this house, it had kind of like a 1.5-car garage. It was like half falling over and the concrete was all cracked and there was holes in the floor. And but at some point, my brother sent me a link to, you remember the arcade game Turbo? It was like the overhead racing game.
Yeah.
And they had it on like ColecoVision and stuff like that. And it was it was the theme of my collecting career, $100 on Craigslist. And, unfortunately pinballs generally do not fall into the $100 category, but, so I was like, what the hell? I'll grab it. I remember playing it. There was a skating rink near me when I was a kid and we played that game a lot. I played it with my roller skates on. I was like, that'd be cool. I'll have an arcade game. That'd be awesome. Right. So I grabbed that and. That was kind of the beginning of the end as far as, collecting arcade games and pinball machines. But so that went into the old garage, right? And then I ended up getting a Tron. I had a Tempest. I'm looking around because I still have a lot of them. You just can't see them on stream. I have a pair of San Francisco Rush the Rock driving games.
Oh, wow. We were just talking about San Francisco Rush when Travis was sitting here.
Those are great because you can get them cheap because they're huge and people want to just get rid of them.
Ah, interesting.
So they look impressive, like, but they're pretty attainable.
Monte Cruisin'.
Yeah, there you go. Did you guys see that new Cruisin' they're coming out with? The new Cruisin' arcade game?
Oh, yeah, didn't we? I think I saw a picture. Like, it's out, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's out yet or if it's coming out soon, but it looks crazy.
Yeah, I forget what it was called. I saw a picture of a cabinet. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I want to play that real bad because I'm a big fan of all those like 90s.
Yeah, those stupid racing games.
Stupid, ridiculous. Like I don't want like Forza and all that stuff. No. I want to like fly my car through the air and do crazy tricks and go through secret passageways and stuff like that.
Yep, exactly.
That's what I'm into.
Yep.
So you've been streaming since 2013?
We started streaming in January of 2015, so almost two years.
And you have like one of the coolest like setups. Because nobody really streams like live pinball games. You have like multi-camera setup. So you can see like the person playing, you can see like the entire board and everything. Like it's pretty. Is that the proper term for it, the board?
It's a play field.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we were kind of inspired. There, it goes way back to, I think 2012 was the first pinball stream I ever saw, and it was at PAPA World Headquarters. PAPA is the Professional Amateur Pinball Association. Mm-hmm. And they were streaming, they had this the PAPA Circuit Championship. So that is like players compete all year at these big high level events. And at the end of it, they have the circuit championship where they invite, I think it's the top 25 or 50, something. Oh no, it's the top 30 players come. And so it's like running the gauntlet. The player that's player 30 faces 29. And then whoever wins in that moves up and has to play all the way through to get through to the top. And that year, the player who was at the bottom made it all the way through the gauntlet, defeated everyone, and won the championship belt. And they have this championship belt that looks like a WWE wrestling belt. And it was like the most engaging thing I've ever watched. Like, I was like, this is amazing. This is so much fun. And it really got me hooked on both competitive pinball and watching people play pinball. Mm-hmm. So, and they kind of had that three camera setup where you could see the overhead shot on the play field. You could see the player, and you could also see the scoreboard in the back, the dot matrix display. So they were really the inspiration. A few others, such, I don't know if you've heard of Lethal Frag. He's a pretty big YouTube or Twitch streamer. Mm-hmm. But he started streaming pinball too. And then other folks started picking up from there. And then we're like, you know, let's give this a shot. So my friend Nick and I, we started brainstorming, like, what would we want? We don't want to just watch somebody doink around on a machine and whatever. We want to kind of have more of a show right. And a format. So what's the format going to be? So we came up with, like, what's going to keep people interested and engaged? So we decided to do, we would do, like, a four-player battle. It would be, like a mini version of that PAPA Circuit Championship. So you would face off against four players from Buffalo. We're called the Bro Crew. Because our show is called Bro Do You Even Pinball, mm-hmm. which we've been told by folks that they hate the name. Some people don't get it. We think it's funny though, and it's weird and different, so we stick with it. So you start with like the lowest, that there's a ranking system for competitive pinball. It's called the IFPA, International Flipper Pinball Association. And every time you play in a tournament, you earn things called World Pinball Player Ranking Points, or Whoppers, WPPRs. And so we rank the opponents in order of their Whopper ranking. So the lowest ranked player will face off against the guest first, all the way through to the highest ranked player, who is Nick. Nick is the highest ranked player in our group. He's in the 200s in the world right now. And so, yeah, it's like they go through, they battle the crew, we do a little interview. And then we play, that usually takes about an hour, and then we hang out and play for about another hour. So it's typically about a 2-hour stream every Thursday night. And then we started streaming other times during the week. So, like Monday nights, I'll just stream a game at my place. I've been playing a lot of The Hobbit lately because, Jersey Jack Pinball is kind enough to loan one of those to us. Mm-hmm. So, I'm kind of playing the heck out of that while we got it. And then, Nick plays on Tuesday nights from his place. He's got about 11 games in his basement too, because he's an addict just like I am. And then we partnered up with our friend called, his name's Mixer Tuna, Mike Lukianoff. He's I don't know if you've heard of the competition, the Iron Man of Gaming, but he's like a 2-time Iron Man of Gaming champ. So he's like a ridiculously good video game player, and he's also into pinball. So and we liked his streams. We brought him on board. So he streams Saturday nights for us on the channel. So,
oh, wow.
4 nights a week, you get live pinball on Buffalo Pinball.
That's pretty, that's a lot of dedication.
It is. It definitely helps having a team where you can kind of divide and conquer and pick different nights of the week. And I would not have the time to commit to it because, you know, I have a family, mm-hmm. I have a job. I'm in grad school right now. So it's, yeah, one night a week is cool. Yeah.
So I'm going to play, I'm going to just play some of the, pinball arcade.
Awesome. This is PS4?
Yeah, for the PS4. I was going to mix it up. I was going to play some of this, and I was going to play some Jackie Crush on the Super NES. It was on the Super Famicom. It wasn't released here. It was like the third in the series of the Alien Crush and, Devil's Crush series. But my SCART cable on my Super NES is like all jacked up, and I'm getting like these blue lines across the screen. So I'm just gonna stick with the Pinball Arcade. It has quite a few different games, and I'm sure Kevin, you can tell us a lot about each one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if you could show me the screen, that'd be great.
So these are based on real pinball machines, is that right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So this the company is called Farsight Studios. We actually partner up with them on Twitch. They stream, so every month they release a new game for the Pinball Arcade. Typically it comes out on iOS and Android and Steam first. So they will announce it on Twitch with a live stream. They'll show it off. And then we'll try and find the real machine to show you like the real version of it and how to play it. And we'll give away digital copies of the game during our stream following there. So it's kind of a cool partnership. Yeah.
I'm going to start with Terminator 2 because okay. I love Terminator 2. Now, I mean, I've never played. Oh, wait. Oh,
the pinball machine.
Maybe I don't. Maybe I only have season 1. I might just have. Wow, they're up to season 4 now?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot.
Wow. Now, you know, I want to say it's been years since I've played a real pinball machine, but I never really thought of, you know, when I was playing pinball, I never really thought of, ooh, you know, I love this machine, you know. I was just like, oh, I'm playing like pinball, you know.
Yeah, so the Pinball Arcade. Go ahead.
No. I wouldn't say anything, really.
Okay, so the Pinball Arcade is really what opened my eyes to like how cool pinball is, because I started playing it on the Xbox 360 when I was I must get every achievement mode. And in order to get achievements on the Pinball Arcade, you have to like achieve certain objectives in the game. And through doing that, you learn that there's so much going on that's very video game like. It's not just, you know, you plunge the ball, you try to keep it from going down the drain and game's over, let's see how many points I got. There are different modern games have things called modes, which you can kind of consider like a level in a video game. So in a mode, it'll present you with certain shots that are indicated by lights on the playfield that you need to hit to finish
like crashing.
That mode.
The game is crashing for me. I just like kicked me out. I don't know what's going on.
Bummer.
Weird.
Oh yeah, I see that. And then like on modern games, there's also things called wizard modes, which is kind of like getting to the end of the game and beating it, which is generally pretty hard to get to, but when you get to it, it's pretty cool.
Did you check for patches?
Yeah.
That's odd. Well, hopefully you can actually get into a game. but yeah, I mean, the video game pinball games that I've played the most, I guess, are NES Pinball and Kirby's Pinball.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, Kirby's Pinball is one of the more popular video game pinball games, I think. Yeah, or at least one of the more unique, because it kind of does a lot of things that are very video gamey. You know, you fight the boss. Yeah. But like what you're saying, like you can have like objectives and stuff, which is not something you really think of in a real pinball machine.
Yeah, and when you get to like super modern games like The Hobbit, or like they just came out with a Ghostbusters machine based on the original Ghostbusters, not the new Ghostbusters. Yeah, the level of complexity in some of these games is pretty amazing. And like go ahead.
Oh, no, go on.
I was just gonna say, you know, it could take you years like playing this, like The Hobbit, or like there's a Lord of the Rings game. It could take years playing it at your house to ever get to the end of it. So,
well, I mean, it's interesting to hear about the, you know, new pinball games, because you don't hear about like, you know, new arcade games all that much. I mean, there are some, but it's not what it used to be. So, would you say that pinball is doing better than arcade games?
Yeah, I mean, pinball is kind of in a renaissance period right now. I think, you know, people want a physical experience. We're mm-hmm. also digital all the time. You're sitting in front of your computer at work, and then you got your phone all the time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You want that real life, like, social experience where I get together with my buddies and play some pinball. And it's not The big attraction, I think, to it, too, is that it's so random. So it's never the same experience twice, especially on, like, classic, you know, Pac-Man. You can learn the patterns, too. There's no patterns in real physics, you know what I mean? So there's competitive pinballs taking off. You're seeing, like, the rise of the barcades and things like that are really starting to pop up all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's that analog thing that's really drawing people in right now. So...
What are the big companies in pinball right now?
So there's a handful of companies making pinball machines. The one that produces the most machines every year and has been around the longest is Stern Pinball. You can see a couple Stern pinballs over in the corner there. I've got a Tron and the Ghostbusters. There's also Jersey Jack Pinball. We were just there yesterday, actually streaming they just released a brand new game by the designer Pat Lawler. He made The Addams Family. That's like the biggest selling game of all time. And
really?
He's like Earthshaker and Whirlwind and stuff. So he's been out of it for a long time and they brought him back. This is his first game in probably 10 years. And so we got to debut it on Twitch, and that was, you know, huge opportunity for us. And we were really glad to show that off to everybody.
So how much does a modern machine cost?
Brand new in the box machines.
Not very good at this.
New in the box games can run anywhere from $5,000 up to Stern just announced a new game based on Batman 66, the original TV show with Adam West.
Yeah.
They have a super limited edition of that, limited to 80 machines. It's going to cost $15,000.
Wow. Yeah, so I imagine that's mostly going to
be
I got to
play
Dr.
Dude. I got to play Dr. Dude.
Oh, there you go.
It's a great name.
But I imagine that's mostly selling to places that will install it for the public to use, and they might actually make some money back on that.
Actually, my guess would be that's going to go to very, very high-end collectors who are going
to, you
know, the doctors and and super rich folks out there that have the spending cash. There's a big collector community in pinball. So that would be my guess is you'll find a few on location, but most are going to go into private homes.
Now, if someone was interested in having a pinball machine or two in their own home, what would be sort of the easiest, both on the wallet and just to actually make it happen? How would you approach someone who was interested in that?
Sure.
Or
so
to approach it?
Yeah, you don't have to buy a $5,000 machine, and I would highly recommend not buying that to start with. Because the thing is, like, pinball is a physical device. Things are going to break. And I'd much rather, like, tinker around with a machine I spent a couple hundred dollars on than one that I spent $5,000 on. So I would recommend, like, a late 80s, probably, machine. I got a Roller Games machine was my first one. I don't know if you remember that TV show, The Roller Games. It was only on for, like, one season.
I remember it.
But it was, like, a roller derby kind of show that was sort of wrestling, like WWE wrestling style. And they had, like, an alligator pit and all sorts of crazy stuff. But, you know, that was a theme that, like, not a lot of people are like, I have to have this. So the value didn't go up really well, really high. But it was still a super fun game to play. And it was great for learning how to, like, what do I do to own a pinball machine? What does it mean? When something breaks, I can tinker around with it and not feel too bad about it. So, you know, those late 80s games hold a lot of good gameplay and aren't super expensive.
So
it's more about the space, like, than anything, probably. Like, finding like space for it. Like, I definitely couldn't have one here.
The running joke is when you buy one pinball machine, make room for number two. Because they have the addictive quality. So it definitely pays to have some space. A lot of people will put them in their basements if you have a basement. Down south, I understand that's not as common a thing. I don't know. Do you have a basement, Corey?
I have a basement, but I'm not that far south. I'm more Midwest than anything.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a basement, but I don't think it's
and you're
super
more south.
Uncommon. Yeah, I'm definitely in the south. I mean, my parents have a basement.
Yeah, so a lot of people will take that space, that unused space, and fill it up with pinball machines.
I mean, I'd put it up here if I could somehow get it up on the third floor, but I don't think that'd be possible. I couldn't even get another replacement couch up here. So, I don't know. know if it
so the thing is, like, pinball machines fold down. I can actually, I drive a Scion XB, and I can fit a pinball machine in that.
Really?
Yeah. So the head, the back part where the scoreboard is and the back glass, that'll fold down, and then the legs all come off, and then you just slide it right in.
All
right. So they're actually easier to move than arcade games.
There, when we were at Arcade Legacy, when I was just at up at Corey's last weekend, and we went to shoot some stuff for a project at this place called Arcade Legacy, and we got to sort of tour their junk pile, you know, their machines in various states of disrepair, some that might not even be salvageable, and there was. In one corner, there were two panels for, I'm not sure exactly what Star Wars game it was for, but it was, you know, the whatever you call it, the vertical panel, you know, the thing in the back.
Yeah.
For the game, it was just, you know, it was gorgeous. I wanted to take one and hang it on my wall, you know. It looked amazing.
Yeah, so that's a lot of the appeal of pinball, too, is the artwork on it. They're kind of like moments in time of pop culture history, right? Mm-hmm. They're kind of kinetic art altogether. So yeah, the thing we've found and like the companies are finding is that if a game comes out and the art is not good, there will be a big backlash from the pinball community because you're buying this thing to put in your house. You want it to look really cool and nice. Like there's a Stern released the Game of Thrones machine about a year ago, not quite a year ago. And it had very like Photoshop-y, like just pictures of the cast and stuff on it. And people had great expectations for this game because we kind of knew it was coming. And the art came out, people just like flipped out and they were like, this is terrible. What are you doing? Oh, yeah. People like this, people like the hand drawn, like custom like illustrations and stuff. So on Ghostbusters, they hired an artist. His name's Jeremy Packer. He goes by Zombie Yeti. And he hand drew all the art on it. It's gorgeous. So like when they come out with a game like that, or if you've seen the Metallica pinball machine, the artist Dirty Donnie did the art on that. People just start throwing their money at Stern.
It's weird, like stuff like that. You know, it almost feels like, in a weird kind of way, like pinball is kind of like the vinyl of games. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a very good analogy. I have a bunch of vinyl on my wall too, so I think it all goes hand in hand. But it's the and like I have a niece; she's a teenager, and she's like taking Polaroid pictures again and stuff. So it's like this, like going back to like it was when we were kids. It was like all digital, right? Like I want to play video games. I want to like control the characters on my TV. And now it's like that's so common that like what else is out there? You know, people start exploring and they find these other ways to entertain themselves.
Yeah, well, I think analog things, you know, I was just I was having a conversation with Corey's friend Joey when we were going game hunting while I was there. You know, talking about like so many people, you know, even when I was in college, you know, digital photography was still, you know, at least good digital cameras were still relatively new. But even then, like, you know, the other students that were in class just thought that, like, you know, learning to shoot on film was just so stupid and pointless. And it's like, you know, when you're working in a non-digital realm, I feel like it makes you think about how it works much more. And I think you walk away with more of an understanding of the workings of it. And I think, you know, any sort of analog technology, you know, can make you, you know, you just think about it differently. It's like, oh, that's, you know, that's interesting. I can see how it works more tangibly.
Yeah. It's awesome. Like opening up a pinball machine and seeing how everything physically works. It's, I wish I could show you because like you lift up the bottom of a pinball machine or just open the coin door and look inside. You see all the lights flashing and all the mechanics that make the things on the top do the things that they do. They're really feats of engineering.
Yeah. I mean, pieces are probably so small too, you know, it's just, it all.
Yeah. Cause you have to,
Like someone made it work.
You have
work.
To consider like all the footprint underneath the playfield to make all of these things on top work. It's like, I don't know how they do it. They're geniuses.
Would you say that it's that pinball machines are challenging to repair when you need to, or is it something that your average pinball collector would be able to do themselves, or do you kind of need some help?
It certainly helps to have a friend who knows what they're doing. The internet is a great resource, and nine times out of ten, when you run into a problem, you can just search for it and find it on either old news groups or modern sites like Pinside. There's always people trying to out there helping and posting repair information. But if you have an inclination towards, you know, a maker kind of mindset, or you have an interest in learning how things work, then you can figure it out.
A lot of people in the chat are just so antsy to get us to say what our thoughts on Nintendo Switch are.
Switch. Yeah, I see that.
I mean, I am, you know, a diehard Nintendo fanatic. They could have made it look like the stupidest thing in the world, and I would have bought it. But it looks awesome, so I'm excited. It's exactly what I think we expected it to be. Mm-hmm. So I am excited. I know Nintendo is not ready to say that it is a replacement for the 3DS as well as the Wii U, but it is ultimately my hope. You know, assuming I don't think they want to say that it replaces the 3DS yet, because they don't want to put all their eggs in that basket, right? But once it takes off, I think, you know, we're going to sort of see a unified Nintendo platform where games that would be only on a handheld release like Pokemon or Fire Emblem or something like that, which would generally you would expect to find that on handheld on these days. I think we're going to start seeing those games just come to the Switch. You can take it with you. The only problem is a replacement for the 3DS. Obviously, I like the clamshell because it protects the screen and it's, you know, small enough. Even the XL is small enough to fit in your pocket to take with you. This would still be a good travel machine. It's just something that it's not exactly pocket friendly, but I'm excited.
Can I just give a shout out to Austin Macker? He's in the chat room. He's a gameplay and talk. He also streams pinball on Twitch. So what's up?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's commented on our videos and stuff before. I'm familiar with him. I didn't know that he did the pinball. That's pretty cool.
So there's another really weird like connection, like kind of parallel to like the connection that Corey and I have. Like he and I go way back to the Atari Jaguar days and like posting on Jaguar forums in the like mid 90s, and then we ended up meeting up at there's a giant tournament called Pinburg, and I was like, oh my god, are you like. He used to be Austin something on the forums, and he goes, yeah, he's like, so, you know, the internet is huge and tiny and all in the same.
It's crazy. Like I'm constantly amazed, you know, just how many people I've met over the years that keep like resurface, I guess.
Yeah.
In different capacities. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So I think, Let me run back. We had a question from Munchkin Gaming. What are your thoughts on pinball as it relates to the Nintendo Switch? Can it change the way we play pinball as a console game? I like that. That was a good effort. So I'll address that. I don't know. Like digital pinball is digital pinball. I don't think at least what we've seen of it so far, I don't think it can. It will have a huge impact on like digital pinball games. But
you know what you could do? You could hold the screen vertical.
Yeah.
And you'd have like, you know, that tall playing field.
Yeah, I do that with my iPad when I play Pinball Arcade. They have a portrait mode in that. Mm-hmm. So it would definitely be good for that. And it would be better because you have the physical controls. Right. I'm not a big fan of like, tapping the screen for the flippers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The thing that is missing in digital pinball that is so huge in real pinball is the physical like nudging of the machine. So.
Right.
A lot of people who are new to pinball, they think you can't nudge the machine, that's illegal. That's not the case. You can totally, like, you have to, especially if you're going to play competitively, you have to learn, like, how to move the machine to keep the ball in play and nudge it out of the out lanes. And that's what I find, as I've become better at pinball, it's what I find lacking in the digital version.
Because it gives you a little bit of extra, like, control over what's going on, or else you'd be kind of at the whim of, like, what's happening a lot of times.
Yes, so it gives you the ability to, like, knock it back into the play, and then every point you score after you knock it back into play is, like, 3 points, right? Because otherwise it would have been going out, and you would have been drained and been over with. So that's a huge skill.
There are some pinball games I've played, you know, they have a button to push to nudge a thing, but obviously it's not, you know, it's not
the same as like doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's either, I mean, I don't know exactly how it's programmed, if it's just purely a random effect, or if it's the same effect every time, you know, obviously depending on where you are. But I mean, you wouldn't have the real control over it that you would. And that's something I've never tried, like, in person, you know, with a real pinball machine. I've never tried the whole bumping thing. But would that not put more wear and tear on the parts?
Like nudging the machine around?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, it's going to put more wear and tear on you, I think, than it will on the machine. You'll see people do it. There's, like, some illegal moves that you can do in pinball. There's something called a death stave where if the ball's coming down the outlane, you can like shove the game and like knock it back up between the flippers and continue play. You like bounce it off the bottom where the ball would drain and put it back into play. That's illegal in competition, but you'll see folks at bars and stuff doing that if they know what they're doing. There's also a thing called the bang back where if it's coming down between the flippers, you can like smack the front of the game and knock it back up. That's the one that you can really do some damage to yourself trying to do that. There's some cool videos like Papa has done, like don't do this videos, but then they show you how to do it. So check out Papa on YouTube. There's some videos there. You can see him how to do that.
Now I'm hoping on this PS4 game that when you pull the plunger, you're using the right analog stick.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
you press
it down and then like let go of it. Yeah, I mean
there is a nudge feature in Pinball Arcade. It's almost like too easy though, because it shoves it a lot and it doesn't give you warnings or tilts very often. So the people who play this and have the ridiculously high scores really know how to nudge the machine and keep it in play. If you figure out how to nudge it, you can basically never lose the ball.
Really? So that's like, I don't even know how to. Oh, okay. You can use the left analog stick to do it.
Yep. The other stick will nudge.
Oh, all
right. Cool.
It's like kind of funny how like it just kind of shakes like that.
Are the flippers just?
Oh, and then so it's like illegal
or something.
If you do it too much, that's like the tilt, and then it like makes it so you can't do anything, right?
Right. So in a physical pinball machine, there's a like a weight swinging on a pendulum. And there's a metal ring around the pendulum, and if it hits the edge, that's how you get a tilt warning. And if you get, typically in most modern games, if you get two warnings on your third nudge that hits that ring, it's going to tilt. You're playing a game called No Good Gophers right now.
Yeah.
So this is I mentioned Pat Lawler before. He designed this game as well. This was kind of they wanted to do a Caddyshack theme.
Oh, yeah.
They either get the rights to Caddyshack or didn't want to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like a unlicensed Caddyshack. But it's actually kind of better because it's...
I mean, it's funny because I thought of Caddyshack as soon as I saw this.
Mm-hmm. And there's a shot you can hit if it comes down the left in lane. The in lane is on the left-hand side. There's a thing called the slingshots in the middle that fire the ball back and forth. The in lane is what feeds it to the left flipper. And at certain points, there is a ramp that comes down. When the ramp comes down, if you hit that, and it'll go up way up in the top of the playfield, there's a hole in one shot. So you're like physically sending the ball flying through the pinball machine to hit that hole. It's like one of the best shots in pinball.
Corey, you've got requests for Gorgar or Funhouse.
Okay, I'll do those next.
Funhouse is another Pat Lawler game. He's made a ton of great games. Gorgar is a cool one too. It's a more simple machine. It's like an early 80s game. Both great games though. Gorgar was, I think it was the first game to have speech in it.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it says it says like five things. It's like, Gorgar.
Now, would you say, I mean, I have no concept of just how many pinball machines there are. I mean, Would you say you have a pretty comprehensive knowledge? Like, do you frequently run to, like, oh, I've never heard of that machine before, or generally you're familiar with all of them?
My knowledge goes back to probably the late 70s as far as machines, like during the electromechanical era. So, like, if you ever see pinball on a TV show and it's going ding 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 ding,
yeah,
like that, that's an EM game sound. I've seen modern games where they, it's kind of like whenever you see a video game on TV, it always sounds like Donkey Kong or Pac-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Any pinball machine on TV will sound like a game from the 1950s. But in those days, there were no computers in pinball machines. It was all mechanical, all switches and relays.
That's crazy.
Those are the things they did without computers. It's just amazing. But they made so many of those, and I can only retain so much information that my knowledge kind of stops there. And you don't have to. So the thing about competitive pinball is it forces you to learn about all these games, because to do well, you need to know where the points are on the machine. So every game has different rules. There are different objectives you're going to want to go for in competitive play to earn a lot of points. So there are websites and tip sheets to you know, where you can learn how to score well on these machines. So you end up, if you're playing a lot of tournaments, you end up learning about a lot of these games.
I just realized there's like another flipper up on the upper right hand side.
Yeah, so that'll shoot it up the side ramp up there, and if you're able to get multi-ball going, that's where your jackpot shot will be. You have to hit it off that upper flipper to the left ramp there.
Here's a question in the chat asking if we're excited about the 8-bit do retro bit N64 wireless controller. I'm not so sure. Is that a wireless controller? I guess it is wireless.
Yeah, but
they haven't
announced
a receiver for it.
Right. Oh, use flipper button.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm excited for that, because I don't know the quality of the retro bit analog sticks. Because I know they make those reproduction N64 controllers that look very close. I mean, you see them in game stores a lot, but I've never tried one, and I'm just highly skeptical of the quality of the stick. But I'm not saying it's not good. I just don't know if it's good or not good.
Now, yeah, I still have a lot of my old game consoles too. I don't think I have my N64 hooked up right now, but I got my Dreamcast and of course my Jaguar and Super Nintendo and stuff like that.
Kevin was the one who introduced me to Sin and Punishment. I remember
you
imported
it. Oh, yeah.
And you, when I lived on Main Street, you brought it over.
Yeah, I remember bringing it over with the Game Shark.
Yep.
So you could play it on a U.S. System. That was a great game.
Yeah. I didn't realize you played that prior to the Virtual Console version.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't play very far into it.
Yeah, but I mean, you experienced it on original hardware before Virtual Console, which, you know, was not the case with me. But
that must have been, you know, now. I mean, that was like 2002, probably.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It's so weird to think.
I sold off my so Tron. I have the Tron Legacy pinball machine back there. Came up. I had a friend who was selling it, and it was not. I didn't have the funds to buy it outright. So I ended up selling off a lot of console video games. And I think Sin and Punishment was one of them. But I was able to... I had a huge collection, and it wasn't getting played. So I sold a lot. I had like a complete Virtual Boy collection. I had like Jack Brothers and stuff like that. Like
when sold a few of them like just like a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
To help you fund pinball stuff, right?
Yeah,
What was some of like the really expensive things that you sold? Because I remember you sold like some really pricey things.
Yeah, I had Jack Brothers for the Virtual Boy was one of the most expensive ones. I had bought that for like $12. I think Hills was still around at the time, I tracked down a copy there, and it went for like $400. It was ridiculous. There, I had Conker's Bad Fur Day for the N64, complete the box. I think that went for around $200. Yeah, so it was a lot.
I'm so mad because I can't find my box for that game. I mean, not that I would be selling it anyway, but it's like the only N64 game that I'm the original owner of that I can't seem to find my box.
Yeah. What's funny about that, too, is like I took pictures of everything. I had it all on there, and the guy got it, and he's like, oh, there's wear on this box that he didn't tell me about, and he gave me negative feedback on eBay. I was like, you idiot.
Come on. So I'm playing.
So, yeah.
Funhouse right now. That's what. Okay. That's one that was somebody was asking for, right? It was Funhouse.
Yep.
Or
yeah.
Funhouse or what was it? Gogar or something.
Gorgar, yeah. So Funhouse. Let's see. I can try and tell you some of the rules on it. So it's got the Funhouse is kind of a game people always say is creepy because it's got a talking mannequin doll head in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can smack it into him, and during multi-ball, like, you need to hit it, and his mouth opens and closes, and you hit it in his mouth to start multi-ball. It's pretty great.
It's like eyes follow what's going on, too.
Yeah. So as
how does it do that?
So when switches are activated around the playfield, it looks to the switch that was activated. It moves its eyes around the playfield based on that.
Now, do pinball machines ever have different types of balls, or are they all pretty standard?
There are some games that have different kinds of balls. There's a game called Viper Night Driving that has balls in it that glow in the dark.
Oh.
They're like UV activated balls. There's a game called Twilight Zone that it has a, during a certain mode, it'll kick out a ball that's made out of, it's like a ceramic ball, and that will, that totally changes how like it moves around the playfield and the physics of it. That's a great mode for that. And you'll also see there's like some people put like black pinballs in their machine to like mod it out and make it look cool. So yeah, they're all pretty standard, but yeah, there are a few exceptions.
Yeah, I mean size. The factors I can think of would be like the size, the weight, and weight of the ball, and like the tilt of the board. I mean, are those things generally pretty standard?
It's pretty standard. The more modern games have a higher pitch to them than like the old electromechanical games. It's also like you can adjust the pitch of it based on there's leg levelers on the bottom of the legs of the machine. So the higher you raise the machine up, the steeper it's going to play and the faster it's going to be. A lot of competitive players will crank it way up to make it really hard and fast so they get used to playing it at that level. It's more fun that way too.
So you started to... You've started to get some people, some special guests on your show, and notably some famous people.
Yeah, so it's funny who you run into through pinball, because anybody from the 90s probably remembers the Bare Naked Ladies. They had the songs like One Week and If I Had $1 Million. The lead singer of that band, his name's Ed Robertson. He's like a legit huge pinhead. And he lives not too far away from us. He's up in Toronto, and it was like around January of this year, he had bought a game in Buffalo, and we had connected up with him and I said, hey, we have this stream, would you want to come on and play pinball? And he said yes. So we're like, awesome, let's do this. So we ended up playing pinball with Ed Robertson.
And he just like shows up sometimes.
Yeah, so they played in Buffalo at our park in Buffalo over the summer, and I said, we're going to be streaming if you want to stop by. So he came by and jumped on the stream then. And actually, we're coming off our biggest week on Twitch ever. This week has been ridiculous. So Tuesday, we were at Ed Robertson's house. We went up to his place in Toronto. We recently got partnered with Twitch, which means they'll kind of give you some support and push you up a little bit. And so they've been putting us on the homepage of Twitch this week. So we were on the homepage of Twitch when we were at Ed Robertson's house. We were on the homepage on Thursday during our regular show, Brody Even Pinball. And then Saturday, we were at Jersey Jack debuting this brand new game. So we've had, like, the most viewers we've ever had. Like, probably cumulatively over the past year and a half, we've had all those viewers in this past week.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been awesome and exhausting and so totally unbelievable all at the same time.
So, like, I don't really know, like, I'm sure the scale kind of is different for, you know, what a lot of subscribers on YouTube is like versus a lot of, you don't even call it subscribers on Twitch, you call it, I don't even know what you call it.
There's like followers would be equivalent to subscribers.
And
there are subscribers. Subscribers on Twitch are people who pay
$4.99
to give you some support. Yeah, and then they get stuff like they get ad free viewing on your channel and and different emojis in the chat room and stuff like that. So
is this week seen a like a huge increase in followers for you as well? Not just viewers?
Yeah, so we picked up a couple hundred followers this week and a bunch of subscribers too. Especially yesterday, the pinball community really liked and appreciated seeing the new game. So the thing with the new game from Jersey Jack is called Dialed In, and it's an original theme. So most companies nowadays will do pinball machines based on a license because you know, you see the Ghostbusters and there's like that immediate connection with, oh, I know the Ghostbusters, I love the Ghostbusters, I want to play this, I want to buy
it. Yeah.
And in the 90s, games like Funhouse that Corey's playing, those are all original games, like totally unique concepts. There's stuff like Medieval Madness and Attack from Mars that people have been clamoring for in the pinball community, but companies have been hesitant to make because it's such a wild card. There's not that instant nostalgia when you see it. So when they released 2 weeks ago, there was the big industry expo, Pinball Expo in Chicago. That's where a lot of the companies will announce their new games. And they showed this game off, and everybody saw it, and they were like, oh, a game based on a cell phone? That's dumb. I don't want to play that. We thought that was a good idea. But we were able to go out there, and it's called Dialed In, and there's a cell phone that's central to the theme of the game. But it's really about, the cell phone is like causing disasters in a city. And it's kind of like if you think of SimCity, when you would like bring in the disasters to destroy the city. That's kind of like the pinball version of that. And it's really, and there's like this evil corporation that's making all this happen. So it's really a cool storyline. So to be able to like show that and say it's not a cell phone game. There's a cell phone in it, but it's not. That's not the theme of the game.
That's interesting to think about a storyline for a pinball game.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like I never thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, it might be more common than I realize.
Yeah, so even like games with a theme, like Ghostbusters, it kind of follows you through the theme of the movie. You know, so you're going through like, we got one when they get their first client, and like who brought the dog when the terror dogs are running around and stuff like that. So, and then you eventually get through and you can battle the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and there's all sorts of cool stuff in these machines.
I mean, is there ever like a conclusion to the story, or just a setup more or less?
Yeah, well, so once you get through most of the modes of a game, you'll get to something called a wizard mode, and that's kind of like the final boss battle in a video game. And on Ghostbusters, is there are many wizard modes. There's one called We Came, We Saw, We Kicked Our Ass. there's the main wizard mode in that is called We're Ready to Believe You. So. Yeah, there is an ultimate goal in that, but like the game doesn't end when that's over. You can continue playing.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome. And yeah, so on like the Jersey Jack games too, they've gone away from the like little scoreboard you see in the upper left on Corey's screen. That's a alphanumeric display. More modern games had a dot matrix display. And now like Jersey Jack and even Stern has just announced their first games. They all have LCD screens in them now. So when you walk up to a machine, it's able to show you like all these graphics, and like on The Hobbit, it's got clips from the movies, and it does a much better job of explaining what you need to do to achieve these goals in a game.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see the modern advances in pinball. And
yeah, more accessible in a way, maybe.
Yeah, and a little more relatable to people who are used to video games.
Yeah.
And my son is a big video gamer, and we have The Hobbit here on loan, and there are modes in it where like if you drain your ball, a little meter comes up on the screen that goes up and down, and you got to hit the button on the lockdown bar to stop it in the middle, and it'll give you your ball back. And he like instantly knew how to do that because he's a video gamer, and that's a video gamey kind of thing. So it's doing a good job bridging the gap.
All right, I'm gonna play Gorgar.
All right, we're going old school. I think this is like 1980. This game came out.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's an old game. It crashed the game. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why.
You had such good luck.
I know. I don't know why this is happening. It's. I don't know.
You can't handle the Gorgar.
I know. So, do you still have your very first one that you got? Your very first pinball machine?
No, Roller Games is no longer with us. The they either run out of money or you run out of space in pinball. And the thing, I sold Roller Games to get a game called Congo. It's based on the Michael Crichton book and movie from the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that's another one of those games. It's a
Gorgar
terrible
game. Gorgar is crashing the game.
My God, Gorgar.
I guess there's not going to be a Gorgar tonight, or if we want to keep it going here.
Yeah. Let's see, what else you got here? Fishtails, we just played on Thursday's stream. That one's kind of cool.
All right, I'll do that one then.
All right. I can talk you through the rules of that one a little bit. So we can see if we can get Corey to achieve multi-ball. That should be our goal here. So when you plunge the ball, it's going to feed it around to the left flipper. And then on the right-hand side of the play field and towards the back, there's a shot called Caster's Club. You need to hit it in there three times, and that'll start your multi-ball.
This one's from 92. You know, my dad had a pinball machine. I have no idea what it was, though, but I remember playing it at his house. I wish I knew what it was. I wish there was, like, a picture of it or something somewhere. Or it was on a video or something, but no.
Yeah. There's just so many pinball machines that it's so hard to remember. I remember going to visit my uncle, and he lived in Ohio, and he had a pinball machine in his basement. I think it was, like, a Firepower or a Gorgar kind of thing. And it was like, oh my God, you can have these in your house? And I was like, someday I'm going to have one of these.
Just one,
yeah. But it was the best. I remember just playing the heck out of it because it was like, I don't need quarters. So,
but
Corey,
I mean,
there's the shot. You see the three green lights in the back there on the right? And it's kind of flashing. Right, that's where you need to hit it. Now, you're nudging the game now, too, which is good.
Yeah,
so you need to hit it in the back right where there's the three green inserts on the play field and the light flash, and that's where you need to hit it to lock your balls for multi-ball.
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. So
I'll try to get it in there.
All right. Make it happen. The internet is watching.
I guess it's, you had to sell your first machine, but I guess it's not that bad of a thing because the value is probably only going up for everything, I assume.
Yeah, that's the thing about pinball is it tends to retain its value, even maybe go up a little bit. Mm-hmm. The market right now has been pretty crazy for pinball machines, as you can see by like the $15,000 Super LE games they're coming out with. They're really like pushing to find the top end of the market. But
yeah,
so that's pushing up the price of the lower games too. So you can get a game, you can play it for 6 months, a year, and then, you know, turn it into something else or throw a little more money into it and get a little better game. And so it's a lot more fun having a pinball machine than, you know, having money in a bank account, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's
I'm not a financial advisor, but yeah, I will tell you
that. it's interesting to, you know, hear of the dynamics of a different sort of retro community that I'm just not familiar with, you know?
Yeah, it's a whole different world. When I remember when they announced the Tron game, and I was a huge Tron fan growing up, and I had the arcade game, and I was like, oh, wow, that's so amazing. I love that. And, like, seeing them reveal a brand new pinball machine and modern games, they will update code on it, kind of like a video game, too. So the game will come out, and it'll have certain rules and call-outs and sounds and animations on the display. And over time, they'll update it and add new features, add new levels, different scoring opportunities. They'll balance out the scoring and stuff, kind of like if you're playing a first-person shooter and there's one weapon that's overpowered and destroying everybody, they'll nerf that a little bit. Well, they'll do the same in a pinball machine to kind of make it more competitive-friendly, and it'll force you to play it in a different way or not just focus on doing a certain thing. So that's been cool. Like The Hobbit just had a code update this past week that added a whole different wizard mode to it. So now I'm really looking forward to going in and playing and getting into that wizard mode and seeing what that's
like. How
do
you update it?
So you'll download code from the internet and load it on a USB stick. There's a USB port in the machine, and then you just go to the software and tell it to update from the USB stick.
About exactly what you'd really expect, I guess, how to do it. But
yeah,
that's so cool that, like, Even pinball games have firmware updates.
There are, yeah, and they're talking about like making them internet connected so you can just update over Wi-Fi and maybe have like tournaments where, you know, one player is playing against somebody in another location and things like that. So there's cool things happening. So even on the on Dialed In, it's the first game with US or Bluetooth connectivity, and you can actually pair your phone with the pinball machine and flip the flippers with your phone. And they're talking about doing some interesting things like that, like you can mess with your opponents or like get additional scoring in a game if you ended up using it with the your phone instead of using the flipper buttons.
I mean, it's just so cool to hear about, you know, like all these sort of modern things that are keeping pinball fresh and alive, because, you know, I guarantee, you know, most of our chat room here, including myself, I mean, just had no idea, you know.
Yeah, and like Nick and I were like huge video gamers growing up, as you can see by, you know, my obsession with the Jaguar and all that stuff. And there's that moment you have when you're playing these games and it's like, oh, there's like so much more going on here than I realize, and it's very, very, very video gamey, and the trouble is like finding the games on location to play or learn. Mm-hmm. So like that's kind of like, we love pinball and we want to show people what there is to it, and that's kind of what pushes us to do what we do and stream as much as we do, is like because we know how great it is and we want to share that with everybody else, especially right. Video game folks. So, you know, if you're watching the stream tonight and you see a pinball machine, go out there and give it a try, or at least try out Pinball Arcade and try, you know, go in and try to achieve some of the objectives. Pinball Arcade's great because it, like, I talked to the guys from Farsight, and they have somebody there who goes through each game and figures out what everything scores and how you need to achieve it, and it will physically, like, tell you step-by-step what you need to do to achieve these things, or, like, getting multi-ball or whatever. So go in there and pick through a game and go through all the achievements, and you'll get hooked, I guarantee it.
Now, have you ever bought a pinball machine without playing that game first?
I mean, when I bought Roller Games, I hadn't played it before I went to check it out, and I flipped it a couple times. That was like, I just want to have a pinball machine. I don't
really know what it is.
Nowadays, I won't buy a machine unless I've played it for a number of reasons. Like, one, they're super expensive, and I don't want to throw a bunch of money into a machine I haven't played. And, you know, two, it's like it takes up all this room in your house, and you want to make sure it's something you really like before you throw a bunch of money at it. But Stern actually announced they have a partnership with Pinball Arcade now, and they're going to be, so as they release new games, they're going to put them on the Pinball Arcade too. So you'll be able to, like, learn the rules of the game on your digital device and then go out and play it in the real world and actually know what you're doing. So that's a great learning tool, and it's a great marketing thing for Stern too.
That's pretty cool. I mean, because this didn't start out like Pinball Arcade is like something that's gotten a lot more popular. Like, it didn't start out being super popular, I don't think.
No, it's they started out as like, they had the Williams Hall of Fame on the Wii.
They did a Kickstarter too, didn't they? Did they do
Every once in a while when they have a license that's really restricting or expensive, they'll do a Kickstarter to kind of bring that table out. So that, like, the Addams Family, you had to get little licenses from all the actors and everything from the machine. And that was prohibitive for them to just, like, release this game. So they did a Kickstarter. And it's cool because you're basically just doing a pre-order for the machine when it comes out, and then it unlocks for you. So it's a way for them to release these games that wouldn't otherwise be feasible for them.
It's a great idea. I mean, really, because it gets the community involved and everyone wins, essentially.
Yeah, you get the game you wanted, and you're just paying for it a little bit ahead of the time. It was funny, too, because I had backed the Addams Family Kickstarter, and then the month it got released, I had bought my real one. So I basically
You have it, then.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Is it your favorite one? Game.
Yeah, that was the game. I remember, I think it came out in 92, so I remember seeing it was in, like, Game Pro or Game Fan. They did a review of it, and I was like, that looks really cool. And then when it came out, I remember playing it, and it just clicked. That's the biggest selling game of all time, pinball machine of all time. They sold 20,000 Addams Families. So,
which, when you think about it, I mean, that's a lot, but it's like, it's not as many as you'd expect.
Right. Yeah, for that to be the biggest best-selling pinball machine. I mean, that's
now does the fact that a bunch of them sold, does that help bring the price down, or because of its popularity, is it still pretty expensive?
Yeah, it keeps the price up. Like, I ended up trading two games to get that one.
Oh wow.
So yeah, but for me, it holds that nostalgia factor for a lot of people. For a lot of people, that was the game that they remember, that they played a lot of. So despite the fact that there's 20,000 of them and more than any other pinball machine, they got played a lot, so a lot of them are not in very good shape. So when you find a nice one, that drives the price up.
That's like such a random thing. Like, you know, I mean, maybe it seems it to me because I'm, you know, I've watched Adam's Family things a couple of times in my life, but it's never like been like a big thing to me. And I'm surprised to hear this, not, you know, like, you know, Star Wars or something that's like, you know, obviously, you know, probably has a little more pull on pop culture in general.
Yeah, so
I mean, not that Adam's Family isn't big, it is, but yeah, you know,
I could care less about the Adam's Family as a theme, but the machine is great. It's an amazingly well integrated theme. It's super fun. The music is great. The when you start multi-ball, it's like the best multi-ball start in pinball. it's showtime, and the lights go off, and there's like thunder and lightning, and it's great. It makes you feel like you just like did the most amazing thing in the world. So it's like the little things like that that really keep you hooked. And there are Star Wars pinball machines, and they suck. So they're not worth anything. Yeah, and the rumor is they're going to be coming out with one based on one of the new movies. So there is potential for a big Star Wars game.
Surprise, there already isn't.
That's interesting to me because I would have expected pinball popularity to be based on something more superficial, like a theme, rather than, you know, hey, this board is just more fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's both of those factors. So, like, the theme will draw people in, but if it's not a fun game, they won't stick with it. Mm-hmm. But it kind of works the other way, too. If it's not a good theme, it's like, well, I'm not going to throw my money at that, and maybe I'll never find out that it's a great game until 20 years later. Like, things like Congo, everybody trashed it back in the day, but now people love it because it's just a really fun game, and it's well executed, and it's fun, and that kept the price down, but now it's starting to go back up.
Because the movie wasn't very good.
Yeah, exactly. The movie bombed, and that's what killed the pinball machine theme as a theme.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, there's the random, you know, video game, you know, licensed movie license or whatever that's like, you know, really, really good, but you just generally expect it to not be.
Yeah, there, for every GoldenEye, there's 20, you know, Last Action Heroes or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I just I watched a friend play some of the NES Predator game recently. It looks so bad. It looks so terrible.
Yeah. I remember there's an Alien game on the Super Nintendo that wasn't too bad.
Oh, Alien 3 was really good.
Yeah,
I've been kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I have.
And, you know, again, that's a game that I heard it was good, but I was always like, come on, it's a movie license, it can't be that good. But then Corey, I think he recorded some footage for it for some episode that I did. And actually, I think it was the Nintendo Power episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, like this actually does look pretty good.
Well, the reason it's good is because it uses elements from the second movie, I think. Because you have, like, the guns from the second movie.
Oh, so, but I mean, I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. It's Alien
3. Oh, I did it. Did I do the multi-ball? I did it.
Three,
finally, yep, I think movie. I did it. Well, I got it in there.
You have to put it in there three times.
This might be a tall order.
Yeah.
It's easier if you are able to get the ball trapped on a flipper. That's called, you know, when you're able to stall it and hold it on the flipper.
Right.
If you could trap up on the left.
That's called
shot,
stalling?
It's called trapping.
Oh, trapping. Right. Okay.
Trap up on the left and then control your shot. So that's the other thing you'll learn as you play competitively and you see other people play, is there are a lot of like control moves and high level skills to help you control the ball, because inevitably the ball is going to drain, right? The ball always goes down the drain no matter what game you're playing. But what you do with it between the time you plunge the ball and it drains is what makes all the difference. So the more you can control it, the less risk you put the ball in.
Oh, I've got it twice. I've done
the
it
better
twice.
You're going to do. Did you trap up?
No, I was just
lucky. Oh, okay. You're a little lagged on my screen, so I'm not.
Yeah, there's like a. Oh, I did it. Did I do it? I did it.
There you go. Nice.
Ball three locked. Multi-ball. Here we go.
Nice.
Now I just go crazy, right?
Yeah. Whoa. So what you want to do is you want to put it back into that shot that you hit to lock the balls once, and then you want to hit the shot on the far left of the playfield, and that'll give you your jackpot. Easier said than done.
Yeah. I already lost them. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, so multi-ball is like when you're
playing. No, I got here, playing this. Another one back.
There you go. You want to get into a multi-ball, and then once you're in multi-ball, you want to do it. You want to hit a jackpot. So that it's more than just going crazy. There are objectives to achieve even in the multi-ball.
I can't even imagine being able to manipulate and follow what's going on when there's like three balls flying around like that.
You learn how to do it. You play enough, and you start to like pay more attention, like with your peripheral vision, what's happening on the upper playfield, and you start to learn what the ball's going to do more, so you can anticipate where it's going to bounce, and it's the 10,000 hours rule, right? You do something for 10,000 hours and you'll be an expert. I think I probably got that much time in by now.
So the bottom of a pinball machine is pretty typical. You know, there's nothing all that different usually. Are there any that don't follow that same format of the bottom of the machine where the last flippers are?
Yeah, that's kind of, they call that the Italian bottom. That you're seeing on the machine there, because I don't know the full story behind it, but I think it's like the distributors in Italy, like they demanded a machine with a layout like this, or they had to design it this way to meet laws and regulations or something like that.
That's weird.
But that's kind of become the standard. There are certain designers who will stray from that. That's one of the big things about the Ghostbusters game that came out. The designer of that, his name is John Trudeau, and he did Congo and other games like that, and Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's one that's on Pinball Arcade. And he likes to set his games up with a slightly wider gap between the flippers at the bottom.
Mm.
And it's caused great controversy on Ghostbusters because people just think it's too hard, it's unfair, and it does make the game significantly harder, and that it forces you to have to move the game around and nudge it to keep it in play. But I kind of like it, actually. It keeps things different and unique. And if every game was exactly the same and the flippers are exactly the same on all the games, it would get a little stale. But you'll see games like Addams Family has two in lanes on the left and one on the right, so the flippers are shifted slightly to the right. So they do play around with that a little bit.
Now, you know, there's, of course, some games that might have, like, a higher flipper, you know, midway up the board on the right. Mm-hmm. Is there ever, but normally, you know, you would hit one button, it would move both flippers on the right side. Is there such a thing as a game that might have more than two buttons?
Yeah, for sure. So there's a game behind me, it's called Grand Lizard. And it's got four buttons on each side.
Oh, wow.
On the out lanes, there are magnets. And you can build up in the game, you can build up the power to hit the second button and save your ball with a magnet. So there are games like that. Black Knight 2000 has a flipper button like that. The original Black Knight has one of those. You can also do a thing called, so even if there's only two buttons and there's three flippers, but the way the mechanics of the button works is if you only push the button in halfway, it'll only flip the top flipper. So you can hold it in halfway, it'll hold the, so if you got two balls trapped on the bottom, it'll trap the balls up, and then you can flip the top flipper independently of the bottom one. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's a very, very high level technique that I'm not very good at. But you can do. What's my high score on Grand Lizard? I think it's like 3 million something.
Does it save your scores? If you turn it off, do you lose the scores?
It just came up as 3.2 million. Nick's got me beat. He's got 3.6 on there right now. But yeah, they have battery backups in them, so it'll save your high scores.
Now this board that you're playing here looks a little more, is a little,
it's like older. It looks simple.
It looks simple. Like, it's easier to sort of, like, see where all the pieces are, I think.
Yeah, this is an older game. It's called Genie.
Yeah.
Great playfield art on it. It's a wide body, so that's the one thing we didn't talk about is, like, the width of games can change. Mm. So this is a wider game than normal. Most players prefer the standard width. It tends to play a little faster, but on a wider game, obviously, you can fit more features and stuff on it. So this is a wider game. And you got the extra flipper on the right there.
Mm-hmm. There's one in the upper left-hand corner, too.
Yeah, so you've got a whole like mini playfield up there in the upper left with two extra flippers up there. So there's a lot happening on that.
Like, I feel like this one feels a lot simpler than the other ones. Like, it just, like, it's easier to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But even with these, it's like, what do I do to, like... So on older games, bonus is a lot of... is a big thing. So bonus is something you collect when your ball drains. So during play, you want to build up. You can see those inserts down towards the flippers. As you build up your bonus, that advances up and further and up. And when you drain your ball, you collect it. So there are ways to like multiply that and build that up. Different things on the playfield will build that up. So even on these older games, there's a lot to know and a lot to figure out.
Now, is there anything in the pinball community like... I guess modifying boards or changing the rules to some extent
modding like that? Modding is huge, and there's actually like entire companies built up around pinball mods. We have friends at a company called Measle Mods. They with the advancements in 3D printing, they've started making and taking things that were originally supposed to be in games and putting them back, because a lot of times designers will create a design for a game and then things will get costed out to keep the price down on the machine. Mm-hmm. So their first mod was there's a game called High Speed 2 The Getaway. That's an in Pinball Arcade 2. And on the right, when you lock your balls, it's supposed to go in to, it's supposed to be like the police pulling up to the donut shop. And there was a piece of plastic going over that called Donut Heaven was the name of the donut shop. And they took that off. But they 3D printed a replacement for that, so you could buy that and put it back on your machine like it was originally supposed to be. Players get into it. Like my Tron machine, I have it all modded out. It's got lights on the ramps, and the light cycles light up, and it's got like a mini version of the arcade cabinet. I went ridiculously nuts on that game, but I love it. But modding is huge. A lot of times players won't mod it for rules, but... And say like Ghostbusters, because people have complained about the flippers or they say it makes it too hard, there's a mod where you can put on that puts a center post in the game. So like when the ball's coming straight down the middle, you can bounce it back off the center post and back into play. Yeah, it's putting training wheels on the training wheels on the game. But you know, whatever makes the game fun and fun for you, that's what you should go for.
Do you still have your discs of Tron arcade machine?
I do, and it actually still works.
Because you restored that. Wasn't it, like, painted over or something?
That one was not too bad. I touched it up on the sides a little bit. I replaced some of it's got the cool glowing lights on it, the UV lights. I replaced all those. I replaced some of the PCBs in there, but it's been up and running and solid ever since.
I remember when you got the Space Harrier machine. The other game that the guy had was Punch Out. I kind of wish
he did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting.
Punch Out was a great arcade game with that huge button you hit to do the uppercuts.
Yeah.
Love that. That's the great thing about arcade cabinets is it has those physical controls that just were never quite the same at home.
Did you go to New York recently? Like I remember, I think I saw something where Jeff went.
Oh yeah, so we were talking about celebrities in pinball. We were at Modern Pinball in New York City. It's in Manhattan, and Ryan Adams, the musician, was there. He was he's a huge pinhead.
Really?
I was too nervous I didn't want to bother him and go talk to him, but I know he plays a lot. And if you follow him on Instagram or Twitter, he posts a lot of pinball machine pictures. And he stands on it for every concert. He has a mat that he stands on, and it says Williams. Pinball game manufacturer, and he takes a pinball machine in like a road case with him on the road, so he can play while he's touring. Yeah. So maybe he'll be our next guest on the bro show.
you never know. That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his album Rock and Roll.
Oh, there you go. Cool. Devil's Crush, we were talking about in the chat. I remember Devil's Crush. I remember playing that on the TurboGrafx, and that was one of that and like Splatterhouse were like, oh man, look at how evil these games are. Right?
Yeah, I know. Where it was like, Splatterhouse, it seemed like, because that was pre Mortal Kombat. So like seeing like blood and guts like that was, you know, was pretty much like, yeah, it was definitely, I mean, like, I don't think the Splatterhouse like now is like a super great game. I mean, at least it's just like it just, I didn't connect to it that much, but at the time it was just cool being able to see.
Yeah. It was like a horror movie come to life in your game.
Yeah. Cause he was like modeled after Jason and stuff. It was cool.
I like games like Devil's Crush and pinball form because they did stuff you could never do in real life with a pinball machine, like having the creatures running around.
Yeah,
on the
like the enemies and stuff. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, do you play like many console games anymore, or
like non-pinball console games?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I just got a PlayStation VR. I've been loving that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Someone was telling us last week that you can do like a big screen mode where you can like run any source into it, and it like puts it at, like it's like on a screen in front of you.
Yeah, it's so when you first put it on and you're like in the menu system, it's basically that, and just seeing that is really impressive. It looks like a giant screen in front of your face.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because someone linked us to a video clip of like someone playing a camera. Yeah, they had the Wii U running into it. They just put the camera up to like the lens and the visor. Like, oh, I want a PlayStation VR. Like, I mean, I've heard like a lot of mixed things about it. Like mainly regarding like how well like the Move controllers track. Like the headset itself, like sounds like it's, you know, arguably the best of the VR headsets.
Mm-hmm.
But some people say that like the Move controllers like make some sort of jittery effects. But like I really want one, but I don't want to spend money on one.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh, so when you get into pinball machines, it makes video games seem very, very inexpensive. So even like a VR helmet,
yeah, I'm sure that's a.
It's like, yeah, it's not too bad. I'll grab one of those.
Well, I mean, you know what? I say that, and I'm probably going to be dumb, and I'm probably going to get a PS4 Pro at launch.
Okay.
Because, like, yeah, I mean, it's the same price, but, yeah. I mean, I feel like I know it's so stupid. Like, I don't need that right now. I don't even have 4K TV yet, but, like...
And Final Fantasy XV isn't supporting it, like, from day one.
It is.
I thought that they said that they were thinking about doing a patch...
No, I'm pretty sure I read it was supported from day one.
Oh.
If it's not that, that might change my mind, but I'm pretty sure I read that it's going to support from day one, and you know, it should have, you know, better frame rate and stuff. I mean, there will be advantages, you know, even without 4K TV, and I'm going to kind of try to make it a goal to get a 4K TV sometime next year. In large part just because I think having one will be good for the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, that have been asking about, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, because that's,
look on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, so many TVs that you can buy today are 4K, so if people's buying a TV today, they're in all likelihood buying a 4K TV, and it's going to be more and more of a question. I saw a review of a Panasonic 4K TV. I forget the model number. Though I think it might have been a model number specific to Europe. It was on Digital Foundry. And it had... I don't think it had it for 720p, but it had for 1080p. It had a nearest neighbor scaling mode.
Right.
Which for the FrameMeister would be like unbelievable, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's like what you would need, essentially.
Yeah, I mean... Can you imagine if the OSS, if 720p had a nearest neighbor, and if the OSSC 720p worked with that, like that would look unreal. Like if you get your nearest neighbor with 720p, I don't think you could on it. But I'm wondering if that's a common or standard feature, if that's just a Panasonic thing, because that, like, a nearest neighbor scaling mode would be like would that would sell me on TV. Like it sounded like there were a lot of limitations for that TV that they reviewed. I think they said like, you know, the gamut wasn't as high as, you know, certain others for the HDR, and I think it was edge lit LED, which isn't the best, but you know, overall they spoke very highly of it for the price. But I'm going to try to save up some money over the months and get something that I think will be good for the show. But you don't understand. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely, like, I'd like to get one, but I think I want to get a 4K camera first. Let's see.
Yeah.
After seeing yours in action last week.
Yeah, it was the funniest thing because, like, you know, obviously, I mean, I've got Panasonic GH4 for those that don't know, and you know, it's a really good camera for video purposes, and you know, Corey obviously, you know, knew it was a good camera and was impressed with my footage, but when I was shooting it at his house, Corey has a has LED lighting on his HDTV, and he can't get very good off-camera shots of it because you get that rolling flicker,
like the refresh of the lights.
It's the refresh of the lights, not the refresh of the screen.
Right.
And I'm able to on my camera sync up to the decimal place of whatever the refresh is. And I found on your TV was it synced up to about 1/53rd of a second. And you were just like, just in awe looking at the footage.
Because it looks
TV
good
screen.
Finally, because I've been dealing
looking
with.
Yeah. And
well, I'm gonna do Star
Trek. So funny. It was just so funny that you're looking at that and you're like, okay, how much was your camera again?
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, that made me really want it.
Yeah, GH5 is coming out next year.
I know, but it's probably going to be a lot more expensive. Oh, wow, look at this one. I'm playing Star Trek Next Generation. It's like, it has these moving arms. Like, these moving, like, claw things.
We had somebody in the chat was asking what I thought of that game. And let's see, Yanni. Yeah, so this is a very highly regarded game. This is by a designer. His name's Steve Ritchie, and it has all the original actors' voices in it.
Yeah, and the music and so everything.
Yeah, and it's got those awesome cannons on the slingshots that you can use to fire around the playfield. We talked about mods earlier. There's a mod you can get for that will put a laser like sight on the top of it, so you can see where it's gonna fire as it moves around the playfield. It's pretty great. So you can see, I could kind of, on this one, I can kind of explain like what modes are. So if you look around, you can see the Enterprise in the middle of the playfield there, and there are inserts, the white inserts around there that have different words on them.
Right.
And when you hit the center shot in the far back, there's like a scoop with an arrow in front of it. If you hit that, it'll start whatever mode is running, is flashing. And then during that mode, you'll have to hit certain shots. When you either complete that mode or the mode finishes, you'll go to a different one, will be blinking, and then when you hit that scoop in the back, it'll take you to the next, you'll start that mission. When you finish all the modes around the ship there, then you go into the final frontier. And that's the wizard mode.
Molo Gaming asks if Pinball Arcade has the Twilight Zone table, because that's his favorite pinball table.
It's in there, yeah. You can grab it, you know. $5, you can play it all you want.
Do you have like a complete copy of this? You have like all the seasons for it?
Yeah, they hooked us up with it so we could do it on the stream.
Oh, right, right.
So, yeah, so sometimes we'll do the digital copies. And one thing I've thought about doing is like on games like Addams Family that I own in real life that they have in the Pinball Arcade, I'll try to achieve the Pinball Arcade goals in on the real machine. So I'm going to try and do that.
So
would you say that the go on?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, would you say these are, for the ones that, you know, you're very familiar with and have played in the digital version, I mean, would you say it's, like, super accurate, or does it feel a little different to you?
Like, playfield-wise and, like, code-wise, they're dead spot on, because what they do is, like, they get the real machine, and they tear it all apart, and they scan everything, and they, like, recreate everything digitally in three dimensions for the computer. And the software that's on there, they actually hit, it's, like, fully emulated software, so it's running the original code and everything.
Oh, wow.
So from that standpoint, they're, like, perfect recreations. The thing that changes a little bit is the physics of it, right? Because in real life, it's real physics, real randomness, and that you can only recreate that to a certain extent digitally. So that's the big difference between pinball in the real life and digital pinball. But otherwise, whenever anybody says, you know, how did you get into pinball, this is it.
Yeah.
What's interesting is we were talking a little bit about Arcade Legacy before. So the owner of Arcade Legacy here in Cincinnati, it's like an arcade, and they have pinball machines and stuff too. But his brother was just on Shark Tank a few months ago, and he made these like vertical pinball tables. Are you familiar with those at all?
I am. Yeah. So it's based on a platform called PinMame. So it's like the pinball version of MAME.
Right.
It's a little different than MAME in that, in order for the machines to actually work, somebody has to 3D model the whole play field. But again, they run the emulated software. So rules-wise, they're running the rules from the real machine. But it takes a lot more effort from the community to put those tables together. So I had a virtual pinball machine for a while, and I built it out of, I bought it like an old, like, it was like a Sega Playboy, or a Data East Playboy cabinet that I got off of Craigslist for like $50. It was empty. And you put like a TV screen in the play field, a TV screen in the back box, and then like a third one for the display. And then you can cycle through, like, you know, however many pinball machines you can fit on a hard drive, you can load it up. And actually the guy that was on there, I can't remember his name, but he had made me a speaker panel for my virtual pinball machine.
Oh, the guy who made
it was on Shark Tank. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's his brother. That's the guy who owns Arcade Legacy's brother.
Yeah. That was when he was first getting into it. And I was like, this is beyond my capabilities woodworking wise. So I was, I needed somebody to do it. And he was big in the virtual pinball community at the time. So
it's so cool. He makes cool, you know, products. Like, it's cool that, you know, like a small world, you know, like,
yeah, definitely. And now he's on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Those vertical ones he makes are really cool because they don't take up as much room as a regular pinball machine. So if you have a small, small space and you want to have kind of the feel of it, those are a good way to do it.
And it's virtual, so you don't have to deal with the physics of it being.
Right.
But yeah, they gave him, like, I don't know how much they gave him, but it was like $50,000 or something like that.
Yeah. VP Cabs, that's the name of the
game. That's it, yes, that is it.
Yeah, yeah. Did we talk about the issues of lag on Virtual Pin Cab? Gameplay and Talk is asking. Yeah, so that's one of the other differences, too. It's like, in real life, it's like when you push the button, it flips. When you push the button on a TV screen, there's inherent, like, slight lag.
Oh, yeah, our viewers are very, very familiar with input lag, because we talk about it so much.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is the audience that would know about it. I don't have to explain it. So input lag is definitely there, and in physical pinball, it makes a big difference. So,
it's there, like, in physical pinball, too.
No, moving from physical pinball to real pinball.
Oh, yeah, of course. Virtual. I was going to say, like, there's...
The people who play, like, the high-level players, they play a virtual pinball machine, and they're like, I don't want anything to do with this because it feels different than the real thing.
Right.
It's like CRTs.
Yeah.
Yeah. CRTs versus upscaling and all that. Right?
Analog technology, man. Yeah. It's crazy stuff.
Yep.
It's honestly wild to me that, I mean, we've got so much analog technology that dates so far back, because maybe it's just because I find it more interesting than digital technology, but it, in some ways, it seems more complicated.
Yeah,
it is.
It certainly seems like there's more parts, but maybe that's a simplification, because, I mean, you know, the complexity of a of digital technology from the hardware standpoint is so shrunk down now that you don't think of it, you know. I don't know. But I mean, the idea of, you know, a CRT, for example, of, you know, shooting this beam across a screen, you know, faster than you can see it move, you know, being these particular colors and making this image, like, I mean, that's like nuts. That's nuts, man. Like, I can't believe that that was here. We came up with that first. Like, that just sounds so complicated.
I'm gonna start it over. I think it screwed up because it was just playing the music and nothing was happening. I couldn't do anything.
See, that's another accurate recreation of real life pinball. The ball does still get stuck occasionally on Pinball Arcade. If you go into the menu, there's a call attendant option, and you can
really
get the ball unstuck that way. I think. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's pretty good.
How many balls are usually stored in an average machine?
I think three is probably the standard, but it can go like Ghostbusters has six. Mm-hmm. Six is the high end. There's a game that was based on Apollo 13, the movie from the 90s, and that has a 13 ball multi ball in it.
Oh,
which is totally ridiculous. Yeah,
How much would a single pinball cost?
They're like a buck a piece.
Yeah, really? So they're really, you can just buy them. Yeah. Wherever. Like, can you go online and
find
them
on Amazon?
I don't know. I think you probably can. There's third-party sellers. I wouldn't advise it because the people there just buy them from other real pinball vendors and mark up the price. And for people who don't know where to really get them from,
okay.
There's a website called Pinball Life, and I get most of my parts from them.
Is there such thing as like bootleg games?
Yeah, there are. So there are knockoff versions. They're mostly made in other countries. Like, I think like there are a number of like Spanish games that were knockoffs of the real games. So games in the 80s, like stuff like Xenon, and there's somebody I follow on Instagram that posts a lot of the weird like knockoff games, and they're like,
are they sought after at all?
Not really, and not that I've seen. I'm sure there's somebody out there that collects them, but it's like when you go to you see a Sony TV in the store, and there's like Sansui or something inside that sign sort of looks like Sony. It's like that. It's like it looks like the real thing, but the name has changed a little bit, but the art is pretty much exactly the same.
But none of the like the really complicated ones, like that would be too time intensive for them to probably.
Yeah, not really. And actually, what's interesting is there's this game called Medieval Madness that came out in the late 90s. That was super popular, and the price on it had a few years ago had just skyrocketed. It was going for like $12,000 and stuff like that. So there's a company that actually bought the rights to reproduce it, so they're making it again. So it's. It's not a knockoff, but it's like a rerun of the original game.
Right.
So it kind of shows like where the pinball market is these days, that it's gotten to the point where like companies can just
doing reprints of the games.
Like, yeah, would you say that the new one
will function exactly
might be
the same?
Worth more to a collector just because it's new and not worn down, or would the reverse be more true?
It kind of depends who you ask. There are collectors who would rather have a brand new, like, perfectly immaculate playfield and game. Other collectors prefer the original. The thing about the original is if you want to find an original that's in good shape and plays like the new one, you're going to end up playing a lot more. Mm. The new one they upgraded the computer technology in it too. So in the back of a pinball machine in the old ones, they were full of computer PCBs. And on the new one, they have like this tiny little PCB in it that controls everything. So you open up the back and there's like nothing in it, basically, because they upgraded it with modern technology. So there are some advances in it. The new games use LEDs instead of the old incandescent bulbs. So there's energy savings there. They don't heat up as much. It won't wear out the inserts on the playfield as much from the heat. So there's some advancements that they built into the remake too that kind of enhance it a little bit.
Now, I'm thinking this couldn't possibly make any sense, but I mean, you never know, you know, obviously in the world of collecting many, many other things, you know, there's this,
oh, there's Twilight Zone. I had Twilight Zone.
There's,
there you go.
There's this trend for people to, you know, keep, you know, your game sealed, you know, unopened, or your action figures unopened or whatever. Is there anything like that where someone just wants a pinball machine, but they don't want, you can't actually use it?
So there are crazy collectors like that. And most of the time, I think if somebody finds like an old Newman box game, they will end up opening it up and playing it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it'll just get, there are certain collectors who just like having them to display, and they aren't really like real hardcore players, and it's more about just having them, and they like the looks of them, and they like to mod them and make them look real nice. So yeah, it's not totally unrealistic. I mean, there are folks who buy games. I know there's a few collectors locally who have games that are new in the box that they've never opened. I don't know. It's not from because they necessarily want to keep it new in box. They may have like run out of room, and they don't have room to set it up.
They don't have anything to do with it now, but they'll probably do something with it later.
Right, or they'll sell it, and they won't just keep it. It's too big, really, to just keep around. You'd have to buy a storage facility to keep all these things if you wanted to have a collection.
But you know, it's so interesting to hear. You know, I obviously have a, I guess you could call my game collection a collection of sorts, but I mean, you know, I play every game that I buy, you know, it's not, you know, nothing is purely just for collection. It's interesting to hear, you know, just different perspectives on different things that, that people might collect. Like, Corey sold a while back some, records that he came into, and you had one that was unopened that was worth like $400 or something, right?
Yeah.
But the guy you sold it to said that no serious record collector buys an unopened record. Like he wanted me to open it
to make sure that it was all right.
Wow.
Yeah, that was interesting. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, because you think about video games, and if it's a sealed game, it's like, and they're buying it for collector value, you better keep that sucker sealed and ship it in a sealed container.
For all I know, it could be an empty box. Yeah. Like, what if it was sealed, and then, you know, eventually they do sell it to somebody, and they open it up, and there's nothing in it.
Yeah, it's a possibility, right?
But the ball got stuck behind the flipper there. Got wedged in there. That's pretty cool.
If you get that to happen during a multi-ball, you can use it to your advantage and play with one ball when you should be playing with two.
So that's
two
just like another skill to learn.
Yep. That's more a chance. It's hard to do that on purpose, but if it happens, you can use it to your advantage.
And there's like big competitions and everything that still go on. Like, I'm surprised you don't... I don't hear about it. Like these big, like big tournaments and stuff, right?
Yeah. So the biggest one is a tournament called Pinburg. I mentioned it earlier, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Papa puts that on, the Professional Amateur Pinball Association, and this year they had 700 players in it over the course of 3 days, competing for $100,000 in prize money.
Wow. Jeez. Yeah. Are there big conventions outside of these tournaments, or?
Yeah, there's they have California Extreme out in California, Texas Pinball Festival. Pinburg got so big that they had to move it to the convention center in Pittsburgh. So they physically moved like 400 pinball machines from their headquarters in Carnegie, PA, over to the convention center and set them all up and make sure they're all working, which is insanity if you ask me. But they do it every year. And with that, they started a show called Replay FX. So they brought in arcade video games and console games, and it was cool because they had, I don't know, I'm sure you guys saw the Super Nintendo CD prototype that somebody found.
Yeah,
That was there. And
Replay FX. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, And so they were letting people play it. I got to play Street Fighter on it. It was like totally cool. So, and there's cosplay there and tabletop gaming. So they're trying to like branch out and bring other gamers in to kind of like what we're doing, like try to spread the word about pinball, show people what's cool about it, and that like it's something that anybody who's a gamer can really enjoy.
Right. You're going to be going to, are you going to that convention that's like in Syracuse in a couple of weeks? Is that yeah. Or has it already happened?
No, it's coming up. It's in 2 weeks. It's called Retro Game Con, Syracuse, right. New York. It's on the Saturday and Sunday that week. And we'll be live streaming all day on Saturday there. We're going to take the Hobbit.
Oh, cool. Are you guys like guests? Going to be guests there?
Yeah, I'm on a panel. So we're gonna set up. We're going to have like a little booth with the Central New York pinball guys. And last year we live streamed all day on Space Shuttle. This year we want to bring it modern and show people that there's still people making pinball machines. Mm-hmm. And we have this great loner game, so we're going to take it and really show it off and try to wow people with pinball a little bit. And I think they'll be impressed when they see this game because it's one of the ones with the big, like, 27-inch display in the back.
Right. So that.
So yeah, we'll be live on Twitch all day, so if you want to tune in and see what it's like, you can get a feel for the convention there.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty... I'd like to go, like, because that one is, you know, like, if I still lived in Buffalo, like, I would definitely be going to it, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer, and I was really impressed with what they did with it last year.
Yeah.
You know, they have folks like our friend Shane Rerez from YouTube. He's going to be there, and, like, Pat the NES Punk, and they had the Angry Nintendo Nerd there last time.
Right.
So... They're bringing in some folks that will draw people in, and they had, I'm not big into the retro scene anymore, but they had, from what I could tell, they had a pretty good like display of vendors and things like that. And this year they're bringing even more guests and speakers and presentations and things like that. So it's going to be cool.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I'll get to stream with you sometime. Like when I'm now that my mom has moved down to Florida, like my opportunities to go back. Or not as frequent, but I mean I need to figure out sometime. And you're supposed to, I know you're talking to Ian Ferguson, who's on the completely unnecessary podcast with Pat the
Animal. Yeah, for sure. And another Buffalo connection.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like it's like I because when I found out he was from Buffalo and he's like really into pinball, like that's why I was like I tweeted to him and you at the same time and said you guys should meet up whenever he's like in town. Like that.
Yeah, we almost made it happen this summer. He was back, but he was going to a convention and we had a tournament running that same weekend, so it just didn't work out. But
yeah, but the same thing kind of happened when I was there too. At the end of July, you were at you went to some a convention then too. Or I think it was a convention. Was it the Replay FX?
Yeah, I was at Replay FX when you were here. Okay. So there's always everybody's got so much going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said Angry Nintendo Nerd. He's the video game nerd, right? Isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, you think about
I'm
it.
Showing
you
know? My age.
I think it was
Nintendo. Yeah, it was. You know, and that might be. If you start watching him at the beginning, you know, he was.
Yeah, that's what he was. Going old school on you.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so we'll have to get Ian on the show. You've got an open invite to come anytime you're in Buffalo for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's like normally I'd be coming for Christmas, but
yeah, try if you ever find yourself in the Buffalo area. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Yeah, maybe one year we'll be invited
to
the.
There before.
You never what?
I said I've probably been near there before.
Yeah. No, well, maybe we'll get.
My parents took some vacations in upstate New York.
Maybe we'll get invited to that convention one year. The one that's next in 2 weeks.
Oh, the Syracuse Retro Game Con. Oh, yeah. I'll put it in good work for you guys, and then you can come battle us at the show.
Oh, cool! There's like a gumball machine in this one.
Yeah, so this is we were asking about different types of pinballs. This is one of the games that has the ceramic ball in it. So if you can get the multi-ball going, it'll pop out.
Does it look different?
Yeah, it's white.
Oh, nice. I'm gonna try and do it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination.
This is probably the most I've like spent on this game, and it's actually, you know, it's I can see. I can dig it.
Yeah,
you know, like it's definitely pretty addictive.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, someday, like, hopefully, as the channel gets bigger, we'll get invites to stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you guys have been going to some shows and stuff, right?
Yeah, we got invited to a convention in Quebec that we went to in January this year, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was like our first invite.
That was like our first, like, you know, full on invite, but. Other conventions we've gone as guests, but not like an invite.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we haven't been listed on any websites, have we?
Maybe. I mean, you know, our panels have been listed, obviously. You know, is it next month that we find out whether we. Whether we get a MAGFest panel, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be either next month or December.
I want to say they said, like, beginning of November they'd let you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, remember, was it MAGFest, not... Was it MAGFest or Too Many Games where they had an error where...
Right, it was Too Many Games when we didn't know that we had a... We had a panel, yeah. To like a couple of weeks before.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not that that's necessarily a problem. I mean, it was cool, but I mean, because, you know, we just kind of do it Q&A style now. But yeah.
Kevin,
MAGFest, they actually do a big Papa Circuit event at, so there will be a huge pinball tournament happening there too.
You should go.
I know I should.
Yeah, MAGFest is so much fun.
Yeah, it's cool because it just like it goes. It's 24 hours a day for.
Yeah.
4 days.
Yeah.
Like it goes all night.
They've got arcade pinball machines in the arcade. You can literally, if you can't sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can literally go play pinball. I mean, it
sounds like a dream to me.
Yeah, it's so wild. Like, I mean, the vendors close like probably 10 o'clock or 11, but like, you know, I mean, people are wandering around all the time. You know. Board games, arcade games, all that stuff. I mean, people are just playing them 24 hours a day. And like, even though like I try to go to bed at a relatively reasonable time, I just like the idea that I could go down there and play games in the middle of the night if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Austin wants me to come help scorekeep. Yeah. At tournaments, it's crazy. Especially the one I think last year they made the tournament was free to enter. So anybody could just go and play in the tournament, which I can only imagine is a scorekeeping nightmare.
So
we actually ran a big Papa Circuit event here. So we, in addition to like doing the streaming stuff, we run leagues and tournaments and things like that to try to build the local community too. So it's kind of a multi-armed thing we're running here.
I had the multi-ball, but they're all silver.
I like how it says, like, at the bottom of the screen, like, goal 5 complete or something like that.
Well, it's like when you... It's like
when you, yeah, when you complete... Yeah, but, like, you complete, like, objectives or whatever, like...
Right.
That's like... That, like, helps you understand the mechanics of the game a little better than might be just... It might not be obvious to a casual player anyway.
Yeah. So Kevin, is there any machine that you like it's like a holy grail to you?
I've got my two that I really wanted were Tron and Adam, so those are in my collection now.
Everything else is just whatever at this point. Like those are the two.
Yeah, I mean those are the must haves. As new stuff comes out, if they come out with a really awesome Star Wars game, I'd probably have to get that. The new Dialed In game is amazing. I'd love to have one of those. So there's always something on the wish list.
What's that thing you did with Domino's Pizza? Like I watched.
Yeah, so that was cool. And we've got more coming up with Domino's. So Domino's Pizza has a pinball machine, and it's not just like some cheesy little like promotional item. It's like a legit, like fully featured. Full rule set game.
It's not like the Sneak King of pinball machines.
No, it's not like Sneak King.
like are they planning to install it like in their own store locations?
Yeah, so there's a guy that works at Domino's. His name is Adam. He's a huge pinhead. And he kind of approached Domino's with, like, you know, wouldn't this be a great thing for our, like, franchisees to, we could offer for them to have, like, as a collector piece for their basements, or, and a portion of it goes to support the Domino's Foundation, which is a charity that they have. But it's, so it's mostly aimed at, folks who own franchisees and they want, like, a centerpiece for their game room or whatever. But there are certain, a lot of Domino's locations are really small. They're like takeout only.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no room, nothing to do there. It's always really boring to go pick up pizza.
Yeah. But the bigger, there are certain locations that are larger, and those will be able to put a machine there if the franchisee wants. And it's also like, if you're a collector and you want to own one of these, you can buy one. So you don't have to work for Domino's or anything like that. You can buy one if you want to have this pretty unusual, and I imagine it's going to be a pretty low run game, so it's going to end up being pretty uncommon. But it's fun, man. Like, they have the Noid in it.
That's amazing.
It sounds like they're going to do a video mode that's kind of like Yonoid on the NES a little bit.
Oh, that's great.
So they're
trying to make it retro.
Right.
Well, it has all the stuff from their history, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got like the original like delivery car in there and stuff, and like the Noid was like, it's got to be in there, even though they're not really using it in their current marketing. It's
he's the
bad guy for Domino's. He had to be there, so they get it. They're doing, and the cabinet and like the playfield art is really cool. Like, we talked about hand drawn versus like Photoshop kind of art. Mm-hmm. It's got all hand drawn art on it. It looks great. They have an alternate backlash where like the Noid is getting attacked by tanks and stuff on the back. He's like this giant in the background in a city. It's really cool.
That sounds fantastic.
And they asked me and Nick and a few others to do voice work for it, so our voices are going to be at the
end. Really?
So it's like,
what did you have to say?
They just gave us a big list of call outs to do. So it's like, jackpot call outs and like things that relate to the modes, like making pizzas and stretching dough and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Pretty cool.
It's like a total dream come true, and like having your voice in a game of any sort is really just a really cool opportunity.
Yeah. So
they're coming like this Friday or this coming Saturday in Buffalo. There's a place called Pocketeer Billiards, and they have 40 pinball machines, and they ordered a Domino's machine, and they're getting the very first one off the line from Spooky Pinball. So we're doing a launch party for it. So if you're going to be in the Buffalo area, you can come down to Pocketeer. You can play the game, get some free pizza. There's prizes and giveaways from Spooky and Domino. So it's going to be a good time.
That's awesome. Yes. Like,
yeah,
that they, they're seeking you out to do this stuff. Like, that's so cool.
And that's like a cool project to be involved with too. Like, I think, because it's pizza, it has the Noid, what's not to love?
We got to go out to their headquarters in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Oh wow!
We streamed the game live from the
Domino's. That is so cool.
Yeah, the guy Adam is actually from East Aurora, so I think that's probably why our name stuck out to him if he saw us streaming or whatever. East Aurora is right a suburb of Buffalo. And so he's coming back. He's going to visit with his family. We're gonna do some streaming, and it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I saw the video of you guys like making the pizza and stuff. You had the
yeah, we got to go in there like test kitchen and make pizzas.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, super fun. Yeah. So weird, like between stuff like that and like hanging out with Ed Robertson, and like he sang a song about like pinball and Buffalo pinball when they played him in Buffalo. I was like,
oh, he talked about you guys? Like,
yeah, he did, and he sang about a song about picking up a game from Tonawanda. I'll send you the link is on our YouTube channel. I'll send it to you. I grabbed it with my phone when I was in the audience.
That's great.
It's like the weird things that this hobby has led to. It's pretty weird when you think about it.
It is, you know, like I'm telling you, man. It's like that, you know, it's like a small world, and like you end up meeting these people, and then like other people like resurface.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
You know, yeah, like, man.
I know. And especially, you know, like, I think it's like you and I are like, I think we're like exactly the same age pretty much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, I think being involved, like, you know, like the game fan community, like at the like end of the, like the late 90s. And
yeah. Yeah.
So like that allowed us to kind of, and a lot of those people have gone on to do like a lot of different things. You know, it's just
It's cool. Like some of them are making video games now, and I still play on Xbox Live with some of these guys. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing that we did is we were huge fans of the first Gears of War, and we played all the time.
Oh yeah, I still play. I just got the new one. I haven't had much time to play it yet, but like there's some folks that I play Gears of War with, or that I used to play Gears of War with back then, that are watching me play pinball on Twitch now. So it's like, and they're buying machines of their own, and so it's this community that just. I mean, it's all games. We're all gamers, so there's a like that common thread that kind of binds us all together.
Yeah, I mean, I totally forgot about that because, I mean, that was like, I was out of games for a while, and then as I started to get back in, you know, like playing first Gears of War online was like, it's like a nightly thing.
Oh yeah, it was. The new one's cool. I need to put more time into it, but I'm always streaming pinball, so.
Yeah, At least, when you stream, you get to like just like play the games and stuff. You know, like it's different for us because we try to play games as much as we can, but working on videos makes it tough to play games a lot of times.
I mean, when we're working on like a game focused video, like obviously, you know, we play through the game and, you know, get to have fun with it like that. But when we're working on like a technical episode, like we're just like popping in a game to like get a particular type of clip from it. We're not really playing it, you know.
Yeah,
I'm like way too lazy to do what you guys do. Like we set up three cameras on a pinball machine, we go live, we archive the video, and we slap it on YouTube, and we're done.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome setup, you know? Yeah. I mean,
and you get to just, like, you just get to play the games, which is...
Yeah. You know,
I think that's one of the reasons we like doing our stream every week, is because we get to just play the games that we're playing.
Yeah, this is, like, the video game version of what we do. You hang out with your friends, you play games, and have a good time, talk to the chat room. Yeah. So this is basically...
Super casual.
Yeah. It's super fun. I would be out here playing anyways, you know, most of the time. So yeah. Why not put cameras on and you know, show other people, you know, some of these rules and what's cool about pinball and why they should try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of adds a little bit more to it to make it a shared experience.
Yeah. It's cooler that way too.
Do you just like spend a ton of time down there? Just like do work down there and.
on my machines?
Well, no, I mean, even just like hang out down there sometimes, just not even playing a game, just like get like having like the ambience of like the sounds and everything like that.
Yeah, every day I wake up and so this is like right off of my kitchen. I can see all my games. I just like come out here and I smile. My favorite place in the world is like, this is amazing. I never thought when I was a kid I would have like an arcade in my house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you feel like that? You're like, I can't believe that I've made this.
Yeah, and I have a son. He totally does not appreciate it to the level.
You know, I think you said it earlier. Like when we were kids and we said, you know, like you're gonna have all this stuff. We'd like never believe that for a second.
Yeah.
You know, because
no, not at all.
You know, like even like when I had that Space Harrier machine, you know, like I would never believe that, but like now like I'm kind of like into like arcade games but playing them, you know, using a super gun. Mm-hmm. And you know, like it's just the idea of, you know, like I can play like the arcade version of Ninja Turtles at home, and that was like such a huge thing, you know, like going to the arcade and playing that game.
Yep. Or the VR, the PlayStation VR. I remember like playing the crappy, like I played a Jaguar VR prototype back in the 90s and it was terrible.
I played like a VR prototype thing that was like you had like a hand, like a grip thing, and you had a button that made you go forward. It was like Terror of the Pterodactyl or something like that.
Oh, Dactyl Joust or something, that's, right?
Yeah, it was something like that where you it was like very, very early like polygons. You know? Yep. It's like we're talking like pre, like even like before Star Fox and everything. Like, yep. It was like you stand inside this like elevated platform. They had railings
so
around
in,
it.
Like a pod, yeah.
Yeah.
So when I first, like, before I got my PlayStation VR, I had never played the Oculus or any of the modern ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that moment where I just put it on and I was like, just blown away. Have you played Job Simulator at all? Or
yeah, that's what we played.
When we, uh, we visited Limited Run Games to do our documentary, as we were like just getting ready to leave, like one of the devs walked in and was like, "Have you guys got to try the HTC Vive?" And we're like, "No." And so they let us play Job Simulator. It was fun. It was my first like real VR experience. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, of the modern VR anyway. You know, I have a Virtual Boy.
Yeah, I got one of those too.
I don't think that counts, but yeah.
But the first time I was like, cool. I'm gonna try and pick this up and just like chuck it across the room. And the first time it actually worked, I just like burst out laughing, and
was dying when he was playing.
Because I was doing like the convenience store, and I like how you can take the like bottles. Yeah, like the pop bottles and shake them up, and they like fly around and like let them go.
Yeah. It's like I have not had a gaming experience like that and I can't remember how long. So it's like it's just so fun.
Yeah. When I put on the Vive, like the first thing that struck me was like, oh wow, I can see the pixels. I didn't really expect that. But then like once I got past that, it was like really cool to just be like immersed, and you know, you can like look around. Like the I thought it was cool, like when you like pick the cartridge to put into the game machine in it, like I was like, oh, I can't see what those cartridges are back there, and I like actually move my body and like look over, and I can like see behind it without doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a cool experience. But what I've read about the PlayStation VR is that even though the screens I think are a lower resolution than the Vive, the you don't get the screen door effect, the screen door pixel effect. Like it's softer, but you don't see the pixels.
Yeah, I haven't really I haven't played the Vive or any of the others to really notice the difference. But yeah, I haven't noticed. I had like when I put it on, I was like, "Oh, this is kind of lower resolution than I was expecting." Mm-hmm. But yeah, once you're in the world and you're playing, you don't really notice it.
Yeah, you get over it pretty quick, I think. But yeah, I want to have one. Like, you know, it just would be a neat thing to have in the house, you know.
But, oh yeah.
Man, $400, you know, that's a little tough to swallow for something that I'm not like totally sold on the style of games.
Well, you'll get it when Resident Evil 7 comes out.
Yeah, but I mean, it depends on how well it's ultimately done. Because from what I heard at E3, the VR experience for Resident Evil 7 was apparently not that good. Like it was kind of bad, but. Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's going to be shown at some trade shows and maybe there'll be some better impressions. But I will consider getting it for Resident Evil 7 if I hear good impressions about that. I mean, there's only one opportunity to play Resident Evil 7 for the first time in VR, you know? Yeah. So it's a question of whether I take that opportunity or not. I mean, in some ways, maybe it would be a more pure experience just playing it like normal. I don't know.
So is there any other upcoming things you have planned, Kevin, for the channel?
Yeah, so every Thursday night we're going to be on the homepage of Twitch from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. So those are our big
that's
nights.
Crazy. I mean, like right front and center.
Yeah, so they feature like six, I think, different channels on the homepage. And part of our partnership development is we're going to be slotted in for that time slot. So that's awesome. We're seeing huge interactions. And I was kind of worried because you get all those like random people who aren't normally part of your community. Like, how is this going to go? But people have really been receptive to it. They've been cool. And it's like, oh, I remember pinball. And they come in and they hang out. But yeah, so that's our big stuff.
And you know what's locally cool about it is like, you know, not only are there are they like watching a game being played, but they also get to see people being active during it.
Right,
I think
exactly.
that's, you know, like that's kind of, it makes for a much more like compelling like something like to watch, because there's you guys are interacting with each other while also like interacting with the machines and the chat. Like it's a bit more active than a normal stream, like than a video game stream is.
People have told us that they like feel like they're hanging out with their friends playing pinball when they watch our stream. That's kind of the atmosphere of what we have going on, because it's, you know, it's what we do. So why not bring that to everybody? So yeah, come check us out. Buffalo Pinball on Twitch.
Yeah, the address is right up there. If you like pinball, that's it's a perfect thing to watch. You know, and it's on 4 days a week. Like that's crazy.
Commitment.
Yeah.
It is. And everything's archived, so if you miss it live, you can check it out after the fact.
And you send some stuff to your YouTube channel, but not like every stream.
Yeah, we do our Thursday night Brody Even pinball streams go over to YouTube, mm-hmm. or like, you know, when, obviously when we play with like Ed Robertson or debut a new game,
right?
We'll send that stuff over. We also broadcast tournament coverage when we have tournaments or league finals and stuff like that. That's some of the most compelling stuff because you're actually seeing people like actually compete and, you know, who's gonna win. And we had when we did our Papa Circuit event over the summer. We had like the number two player in the world was at our tournament. So see this very, very high level competitive play. It's mind boggling, really.
And you're like, I'll never be that good.
Yes, I will never, ever. This is beyond. I can see where I fall into the grand scheme of things, and that is not me.
That's great. Like it's so cool that you guys are, because I mean you've only been Twitch partners for like a couple months now.
Yeah, we got our partnership over the summer. So over the summer, we generally scale back a little bit because it's summer in Buffalo and you only have so many weeks of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we really kicked it into high gear starting in September. And we went out to TwitchCon and we met with our partner, Rev, and made some connections there. And that's really what helped us, you know, get that next boost.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So how does that kind of stuff get handled? I mean, we have like a network that we're part of, but I'm not sure like how that is like how it is with Twitch.
Twitch isn't as mature as YouTube yet, so it feels a little bit like the Wild West still. so it's kind of like they have guidelines for how to get partnerships, but if you network well or you offer something unique, like pinball doesn't get the numbers that like Call of Duty and all the big like mainstream video games get, but mm-hmm. we offer something different and unique, so I think that helped us a little bit to get our partnership. You also have to be very consistent with your streaming. I mean, we streamed right. for a year and a half every Thursday and plus, you know, and then we started streaming more and more. So consistency is key. Offering something unique and different, showing that you could build a community. Those will all help you on your way.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think that's pretty much going to do it. Look for a new episode this weekend. We're covering 14 games in it.
Wow. You know,
and it's not what you expect.
Yeah, you realize this episode is probably going to be like over 30 minutes.
It could be, yes, because I started editing my segments earlier, and it's like each game is like roughly between like a minute and a half to 2 minutes.
It's probably going to be about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's going to be an easy edit.
I think it will be. Well, because it's covering so many games, it doesn't have to be. There's a lot of different things going on.
Right.
But, you know, I want to set some expectations. Like, it's probably not what you are going to expect. It's a little
more
bit. It skews much more modern, but it has a spin on it that I think that our audience will enjoy, especially if they liked the thing we did on Limited Run.
It's a retro gamer's mentality.
Yeah,
I think so. And a lot of I'm not gonna say anymore. I'm not gonna say anymore.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to say if people will be receptive to it.
I think it was very spur of the moment that we decided
to do it. It was
we started deciding to do it like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and we were like,
all of a sudden
like really excited to edit it. So it's something we're both working on. We're kind of splitting duties on game capture pretty evenly. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. Kurt Goodman said if the episode is this unfinished, I would be surprised to see it by the weekend. Don't underestimate me.
I have faith in you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean
it may not be Friday, but it should at least be Saturday. But it could be Friday.
Yeah, well, you never know. I mean, I've done it before.
You always surprise me. Like, when it seems like you've got at least 2 days worth of work left, like, you're definitely speedier than I am. Like, I always like,
take longer than you think.
And you overestimate.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I mean,
how long it'll take. So,
you know, I got two completely full days or free days now that my son is over his hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Ew.
Yeah. And now he's going back to school or to daycare. I shot all my stuff is recorded. I have 4 out of my 8 segments strung out. So we'll see. We will see. If it's not on Friday, I'll be Saturday. If it's not on Saturday, I'll be on Sunday. It's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen this weekend. Gonna happen. And then once I'm done with what I need to do for the episode, I'm gonna be kicking into full gear on Game Boy.
Yep. So that'll be the follow up. And we also got a lead on expect the Scart Switcher episode to be sooner than we expected. Because we just there's a new one coming out that we are going to check out, so that kind of gives us an additional.
I think that gives us a better range of devices to look at.
Right.
I think so. You know, almost kind of like FrameMeister alternatives. It took us a while to figure out what the range of devices we wanted to look at were, and I think this is kind of going to fill in that gap for Scart Switchers.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
And similar to what we're doing with the Super Gun episode, it's like, oh, this is, you know, once you see the devices, it's like it clicks. You know, it's like you're like, oh, I don't know what we're going to look at in this episode really, and then you finally get that last device that makes the episode seem to click.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it'll finally happen, you know, and I think I'm excited to get that and geometry out of the way. Cause then we can really get back into focusing on console specific.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are kind of longstanding obligations.
Yeah.
And so are the console episodes really. But it's been tough getting to them, but I'm looking forward to digging hard into those again too. And I feel like Game Boy is my last big promised obligation for some time, because I'm borrowing a lot of equipment, or I have borrowed and sent back a lot of equipment for it already. But it's gonna feel good to get that done.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, thank you so much for hanging out tonight.
It's really been my pleasure. You know, it's an honor to be on your channel. I really appreciate what you guys are doing. You guys are doing great work, and your videos are amazing. So thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed learning about pinball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a totally different thing for, you know, for our audience. So it's cool to be able to share that knowledge, I guess, with them, you know.
Yeah, happy to preach the gospel a little bit, and we'll have to have you guys on the channel sometime to talk video games with us.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of were doing a little bit of a podcast thing for a minute there, weren't you?
Yeah.
Are you still doing it?
Yeah, we do. We try to do it once a month. It's been crazy this past month, but if you want to be a guest on the podcast, that'd be super easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I would really have to add. just tell me about it. Just tell me about it. I'll listen. But I don't know if I can interject any opinions on it. But
all right, we'll check out an episode or two and let us know what you think.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't, go to twitch.tv/buffalopinball and follow or subscribe to them.
Channel the same. YouTube channel is the same. Buffalo Pinball, is that correct?
Yep. YouTube's Buffalo Pinball, Twitch is Buffalo Pinball, Twitter is Buffalo Pinball, Instagram, all that stuff. We try to make it easy for people.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Good night.